This podcast brought to you by Hope 1032.
On Hope 1032, joining us, Professor John Lennox. Thank you so much for your time today.
It's a great pleasure always to be in Australia, even though it's only in cyberspace.
Yeah, we'll take what we can get. And I've really been enjoying your new documentary, Against the Tide. It really opens up a conversation about the existence of God and how science can or cannot, in some instances, seem contrary to the idea that a God could exist. Before we dive into some of what the movie brings up, can you tell us a little bit about your first encounter with Christianity?
Well, my parents in Northern Ireland were very keen Christians, but they were very remarkable because Northern Ireland's quite a sectarian country. And my father, a keen Christian, actually tried his best to employ people from both sides of a divided Protestant Catholic community. And he got bombed for it. And I once asked him, why do you do this? And he said, well, I read that all men and women are made in the image of God, and therefore they deserve respect, whatever they believe. And I tried to practice that, and that left a deep impression. They also loved me enough to allow me space to think. They didn't force Christianity down my throat, but they explained it and made it fascinating and exciting. So to a certain extent, I hit the ground running because Christianity was both interesting, but more importantly, it actually worked in the moral quality of the lives of my parents. So I had a very, very good role model to see and follow.
It's so good that they were such an amazing example to you. Did you ever feel like your study of science and mathematics was ever in conflict with your spiritual beliefs?
No, because very early on I learned that the great pioneers of science, starting perhaps with Galileo, Kepler, Newton, Clerk Maxwell, Faraday, Boyle, and so on, were all believers in God. And I came across C.S. Lewis in my early teenage, and I noticed that he said, quoting a brilliant philosopher of science, he said this: men became scientific because they expected law in nature, and they expected law in nature because they believed in a lawgiver. So if the pioneers of modern science, if their science was motivated by their faith in God, certainly they saw no conflict. And I have never had any reason since to see any conflict. In fact, I see a great conflict between atheism and science, but not between Christianity and science.
That's interesting. Why do you think that conflict exists there?
Between atheism and science? Well, because, as I often say to some of my scientific colleagues, when they tell me they do science with their brain, some of them don't believe in the mind as distinct from the brain, I do. And I say, tell me about the brain. And they say, well, the brief history of the brain is that it is the end result of an unguided process governed by natural forces and the laws of physics. And I say to them, and you trust it? And I said, now tell me honestly, do tell me honestly, if you knew that the computer or the equipment you use every day was the end product of a mindless, unguided process, would you trust it? And I always push for an answer. I've always had the same answer. No, I would not. And I said, I see you have a problem. Your atheism leads you actually to undermine the rationality you need to do science or to do any kind of argument. And quite frankly, as a scientist, I would not be prepared to espouse any kind of argument that invalidated the processes of thinking that we use in everyday thought. In other words, to put it very bluntly, atheism doesn't only shoot you in the foot, it shoots you in the brain, and that's fatal in my view.
Yeah, certainly, certainly so. And one of the other things that's often brought up as being a detractor from the Christian faith and perhaps sat in opposition to it is the theory of evolution. It's something that kind of contradicts or sits separately from the idea of the creation theology. But then you also hear people saying, kind of in a joking way, you know, that there would have been this almighty bang when God said, let there be light. So it's almost this this marriage of the creation story and the evolution sort of theory as well. What do you think about that? Do you think creation and evolution join together in such a simple way?
Well, it's not at all simple. And I've just finished writing a huge book called Cosmic Chemistry, Do Science and God Mix, that go into those issues in detail. But let's take the simplest example. Certainly Darwin observed brilliantly, in fact, that animals modify, creatures modify, flowers modify, and so on. And if that's what you mean by evolution, then that simply happens. And therefore, if you're a believer in God, God was responsible for it. But whether the processes of natural selection and mutation account for originality and for new kinds of body plans and so on, that's an open question. But let me put it this way. If evolution is a process that does something, that in itself is not an argument against God who designed that process. Mm. Very much like a watch. I've got a watch that winds up with the motion of your arm. It uses random processes to wind up, but it is brilliantly designed. I think that people have pitched certain forms of evolution against God rather unsuccessfully. And in any case, the big question for me as a mathematician is, evolution by definition does not solve the origin of life for the very simple reason that you've got to have life before any kind of evolution can get going. So it's not an argument against God. As for the Big Bang, Fred Hoyle, whom I knew a little bit, a brilliant astrophysicist, he said the Big Bang is a joke, you and your Big Bang, because he didn't like the idea of a beginning. And all the Big Bang is a label on a mystery, and it's saying the universe has had a beginning. But the Bible's been saying that for millennia. The Bible actually got there first, which is a point I love to make.
And it is incredible that the Bible got there first in that way when you think science relatively recently, from what I observed in Against the Tide, only recently science has really said that creation had to have some kind of beginning. But as you've mentioned, the Bible writers, they said that, you know, thousands of years ago. So what do scientists think about the fact that the writers of the Bible were before their time in some way, that they preempted the science?
Well, they tend to think rather superficially about it. As Richard Dawkins said to me in one of my interviews that's on debates on YouTube, look, there either was a beginning or there wasn't, and you've got a 50% chance of getting it right. But, you know, that's not what happened scientifically. When the scientific evidence began to come in the early 60s, and I remember it well, even before that, there was huge resistance on the part of the academic establishment because they felt it was supporting creation and they didn't like that. Mm. So there was this resistance, which is well, well documented. And the point is, if the Bible is an ancient book and is packed full of myths, how did these people know? There's much more to it than that. And therefore, I find it extremely impressive that the Bible not only says there was a beginning, but it says something even more profound. It says, in the beginning was the Word was God, all things came to be through him. In other words, this is a word-based universe, so you'd expect to be able to use mathematics to understand the universe. And you might even expect language and computer science to understand the genetic code. It all fits together.
It is just so fascinating. And a moment ago, you did mention the great C.S. Lewis, who you got to sit in lectures with and sit under in so many ways. What do you remember of him and what did you learn from him?
Oh, I learned a huge amount from him. You see, I've no idea what it's like to be an adult and an unbeliever. I needed someone to guide me, to help me understand what it's like to sit in the shoes of an atheist. And Lewis was converted in early middle age, and so he became an incisive guide. And if ever I think I've made it as a writer, I read some of his books, and his incisive logic simply puts me to shame. He also, though he was no mathematician, he was able to use geometry to help people imagine complex things like the doctrine of the Trinity and so on. So I owe him an immense amount, but perhaps one of the greatest gifts was his ability to use controlled imagination to explain deep doctrines of Christianity. Christianity, and that's been a model for me. I trail far behind, but at least I've got the genetic advantage. I come from the same country as he did.
Yeah, that can give you a head start. But what do you mean by controlled imagination there?
Well, what I mean is not wild imagination and wild speculation, but using your imagination around the basic pillars of the Christian faith and of belief in God, and thinking hard as to what they might mean, and also looking for analogies and similes and stories in order to help you explain Christianity to the contemporary world, which I've done now in many books.
And you also, I think, very inspirationally are willing to look at how your own Christian faith measures up against other belief systems, and you let your curiosity help you further your understanding of your faith and other people's views of it. Why are you drawn to see how your faith measures up? Because I imagine some people would be very protective of their Christian beliefs and not want to even question how they may compare to other belief systems.
But that's my way of protecting it. You see, I came early on to the conviction that Christianity is true. It's not simply helpful and encouraging, it's true. And I'm interested in truth. And from the scientific perspective, we establish things by asking questions. And I have found throughout my life, by opening myself up to questioning, criticism, being vulnerable, that has established with great firmness the Christian faith in my own heart and mind. It's that questioning process that I feel is so important. We live in a world where particularly young people, they're asking questions. They won't just take it because you say so. And in the New Testament, we find the Lord Jesus himself constantly not only answering questions, but asking them, stimulating people, provoking them, because he wished them to know that what they believe is true. And so in the film, we're standing in Caesarea Philippi, and I refer to Jesus' question to his disciples standing in that very pagan place full of pagan gods and temples. He said, "Who do men say that I am?" In other words, he was interested in what the disciples had picked up in conversation with other people, and he wanted to engage with that. That's hugely positive, intellectually speaking, rationally speaking. It's the way the academic mind works, and actually it's the way all of our minds work, because we need solid evidence on which to base our convictions.
It certainly makes you very, very able to debate well, and I think that's something that you're good at, but you've also done with some of the greatest minds in science and atheism. You've had to sit across from them and argue for your Christian faith, but you do it with grace and a listening ear, I think. For people who do want to talk about your faith and kind of get into the nuts and bolts of belief with other people who might have contrary thoughts to them, how can we debate well? How can we ask questions around our faith in a positive way that doesn't end up with one of those social media kind of fights erupting?
Well, I think one of the secrets is what my parents taught me all those years ago, and I began with it, and that is to respect people with whom you disagree, and also to listen to them before you dive in. I try to make the case to people. I say, look, I listen to you. I listen to your atheistic or agnostic or skeptical arguments, and I think them through. Now, please do me the courtesy, before you reject Christianity, of listening to what it has to say, because many people simply don't know. And if you get angry in this kind of discussion or debating context, you've lost the plot. There's no need to get angry. My conviction is, whatever my opponent may or may not say, I want to present a credible alternative to their atheism or agnosticism and let the people judge. I believe people are capable of judging, provided you give them evidence. And my job is not to browbeat them, but to give them evidence.
Well, John, you've certainly given us a lot to think about in this conversation, and also in your new documentary, Against the Tide. Thank you so much for your time today.
It's a real pleasure to be with such a delightful interviewer.
Thanks for listening. Start your day with Life Words. Subscribe to Hope 1032's free daily email devotional at hope1032.com.au.